Hi, everyone. Nice to see you all here in the sanctuary today. It's a lot of fun to be together, isn't it? Isn't it great fun to join together? Yeah, it is. It really is. We are so fortunate in this age to be able to join together on the internet and be such dear friends at the heart and even get to see each other nearly every day, even though we're separated by miles. Isn't that sweet? It's just so sweet. Last week we finished up NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 7. We spent about 3 weeks on NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 7, so there was a lot in that. And today, of course, we're going to begin NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Let me find that page number for those of you who enjoy reading along. Oh, here it is, page 296. Funny, I went through all this flipping through the book to find it, and then the page was folded down. If I just looked for the dog-eared page, I would have found it quicker. But yeah, NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 8, page 296. And last week, what we really talked about when we were looking at the end of NTI 1 Corinthians 7 is we talked about how experience is that which we made and we continue to make to cover truth. Experience gives us the experience of something different than truth. So like I have the experience of being a person, right? I can have the experience of being a really nice person. I can have the experience of being an evil person. I can have the experience of being a happy person. I can have an experience of being just really angry person. So it's not the type of experience, it's just the experience itself that covers up the truth. And, you know, I think that probably most commonly, you know, I use the word experience because this is the word that Inner Wisdom used with me in order to gain my understanding, I suppose is the way to put it. But I think the words that are most commonly used are, dream, maybe. You know, people talk about this as a dream. And really, experience is the dream. They're synonymous. People also talk about it as an illusion. Experience is the illusion. It's not the reality. So one of the things that we need to watch, because it's kind of tricky, we've created a nice little trick that we're playing on ourselves. One of the things that we really need to watch if we want to awaken to our truth is we need to watch how much credit we give experience. Are we giving it the credit of reality? And of course, most people are. The way this is usually worded is you're making the dream real, right? But sometimes words that get overused, they have no more power. So sometimes it's helpful to look at the same truth with new words, because the new words haven't been overused yet. So they capture our attention in a new way. Until they become overused, and then, you know, I suppose Inner Wisdom will give us new words again. But when we are completely caught up in the experience, as if it is our reality, we are completely lost from truth. Completely absorbed in the dream. And this is what we learned last week in NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Now, what's interesting about this, we don't want to be confused because the ego really loves to confuse us. We don't want to be confused and think that this means that if we have experience, we're guilty or some crazy little idea like that. Because we are going to have experience. But if you think about it, when you go to the movies, you have experience in the movie theater, right? If there's something funny happening on the screen, you laugh. If there's something sad happening on the screen, you cry. If there's something frightening happening on the screen, you get scared. Right? So you have experience. The difference between the movie theater, again, and the world is that the movie theater, we know that it's just a generated, unreal experience. We stay with that awareness to some degree. We actually hide it to some degree too, in order to have the experience. You know, if we didn't in some degree forget ourselves when we were watching a movie, we wouldn't be able to have the experience of the movie. So to some degree we forget ourselves. To some degree we forget we're sitting in an audience watching, you know, a two-dimensional screen, you know, just pictures on a two-dimensional screen. We forget that, and that allows us to have the experience. But we only forget it to a certain degree. To a certain degree, we still know we're safe. We know everything's okay. And in a way, that is what we need to learn to do in this world. We are having experiences. There's nothing bad about having experiences. We don't have to become, you know, what I think psychologists would probably call disassociated, which is unhealthy. We don't have to become disassociated from our experiences. We just have to maintain that realization, that same realization that we have in the movie theater, that this is just experience. This is just experience. This is not reality. This experience is coming and then this experience is going. It's not my consistent self. This experience doesn't say anything about me, right? There's nothing here to identify with. There's nothing here to be attached to. It's just experience. If we can maintain that healthy attitude, what we're going to find is that there's a joy in experience. The joy that there is in experience, though, gets lost, or at least it's not consistent when we give experience the value of reality. And in fact, Inner Ramana, let me see, do I have an Inner Ramana nearby? You'd think Regina Don Akers would have one laying around somewhere. I think I do have one laying around somewhere, but I think it's laying around upstairs, because I think the last time I read it, I was upstairs, so it's laying around up there. But what Inner Ramana basically says is that this ability to create experience was for joy. That was its purpose, right? I mean, isn't that why you go to the movies? Because you like it? Because you like to go to the movies and have experiences, right? That's why we go to amusement parks, because we like it. That's why Lisa Rose is golfing right now, because she likes it, right? We like experience. There's nothing wrong with liking experience. So Inner Ramana says that the purpose of this ability to create experience was joy. What went wrong, if something went wrong, what went wrong is when we gave it the value of reality. And when we gave it the value of reality, Inner Ramana calls that's delusion. You know, if we say that illusion, which is what experience really is, if we say illusion is reality, then we are deluded. And so we're not here to, again, become disassociated, to stop having experience. We like experience, and there's nothing wrong with liking experience. We're here to know the difference between what is real and what is generated. I'm going to call it generated because we make it. And in fact, if you are in the gentle healing group, which it seems like a lot of people are, last week in the Gentle Healing Group, we read NTI Ephesians, and NTI Ephesians talked about this process that we use in order to create experience. And it said in NTI Ephesians chapter 5, The process that you are in conjunction with your brothers is a process meant for joy. You hear that? The purpose of experience is joy. Fun. We also heard Alan Watts last week in the audio that we listened to talk about seriousness, right? That we've brought an element of seriousness to this play. And again, if something went wrong, he described the seriousness as the something that went wrong. He said seriousness is really that attitude that there could be a disaster, that something could be very, very wrong. Right, and once we brought that attitude into it, we cease to experience the joy from the play. So really what we need to do as we're going through our experiences, because experiences are going to happen, we came here for experience. We didn't actually come here. Let me correct myself. That's just a symbol, but let me go ahead and correct myself. We made this, we generated this experience for the purpose of experience. And that's great, but we just need to remember that. You need to remember this is not a reality, this is an experience. You know, for those of you, again, who are in the Gentle Healing Group, we have a workbook lesson today that can really help us with this, right? During the workbook lesson, when we're doing it, I think we're asked to do it 5 times today. We look around at just whatever is currently in our environment, and we say, I see only the perishable. I see nothing that will last. What I see is not real. And in the last line, what I see is a form of vengeance. But it doesn't have to be a form of vengeance. That's the point. That's what we've turned it into with our seriousness. But it doesn't have to be. It's meant for joy. But the first 3 lines, if we were able to take the delusion out of the illusion, the believing that it's real, the being too serious, the first 3 lines, even if we came back to joy, the first 3 lines are the knowledge that we would naturally hold that would enable us to have joy. I see only the perishable. I see nothing that will last. What I see is not real. If we had that knowledge just embedded in us all of the time, right, we could enjoy every single experience that comes. You're like, oh my goodness, the stock market crashed. We have no money, right? This is fun. Now how are we going to work with this, you know? Just like you're playing the game of life or something, right? Every bit of it becomes fun. If we remember that we see only the perishable, of course, we are not perishable, right? We are not. We're that which is before and after and always. But what I'm looking at is just very temporary. It's not going to last. It's not real. But it's fun. And you know what? As I contemplated this after listening to the Alan Watts audio last week, you know, I really thought you can see that this is true. You don't have to believe this theory. You can see that it's true because it's in our nature. You know, and in fact, if you look at the most innocent part of our nature, which is the children before they become corrupted, if you look at the young children, what do? They play at the game of life. They have experiences. Oh, hold on, I need to answer this. This is from my mom, but I need to answer this. Hold on 1 second. Okay. So when we take things too seriously, we cease to have fun. And so we want to remember that experience is not real. Experience is perishable. It will not last. It is not real. And then enjoy the game. Enjoy the play. Right? So with that said, that's kind of a review of last week. So I'm going to play a song. This song is a song that Resta Burnham, I don't know if you guys remember Resta Burnham. She was with David Hoffmeister for a while, and like 13 CDs worth of songs came through her. I have all of her CDs. I love Resta's music. She was an early teacher for me. I used to sit and listen to her music as a teaching. And in fact, I trained my mind with her music. I would listen to a song, but then if I started mind wandering during the song and didn't hear part of it, I would start the song over. And I would listen to the song over and over and over again until I was able to listen to the whole song without mind wandering once. You know, this is how I taught myself to concentrate. Well, after some time, you know, she eventually left David Hoffmeister. She no longer works with him. Another song came through, and she told me that this song was inspired by NTI. It doesn't say anything about NTI, but something about the general attitude of NTI inspired this song. And the person who later sang the song and recorded it, and I knew nothing about this, was Laurent Ellie Levy. He, and in fact, I think, I don't know if you guys remember Debbie, who used to live with me. Well, Debbie had a grandmother, a very old woman, like 90-ish, a grandmother in Canada who was a playwright. Okay, a 90-year-old woman who was a playwright. And Laurent was up in Canada for some reason. And Debbie said, oh, tell Laurent to go to my grandma's play. So I did. I said, hey, Laurent, you know, Debbie has a grandma that wrote a play. Why don't, you're up there in the same town. I don't remember what town it was. Why don't you go to her play? And he did. He went to her grandma's play, and he loved it, and he went backstage and introduced himself, and he met Debbie's grandma's piano player, the piano player that played the piano for the play, and it's Laurent and Debbie's grandma's piano player who recorded the song that Resta wrote, inspired by NTI. How cool of a story is that? And I didn't even know about it. I didn't even know that they recorded the song, and I was on YouTube one day, just looking up music for our playlist, you know, just typing in different things, and I came across this song. I went, ah, man, look at that. So, here's the song. It's called Come to the Circle, and it's written by Resta Burnham, sung by Laurent Ellie Levy, and again, the musician is Debbie's grandma's piano player.
Come to the circle and teach peace with me. Come to the circle of light. We are God's holy child, all of us one in Christ. Leave no one desolate and separate outside. Come to the circle, it's holy ground. Blessed by the purpose we share. Minds that would come away, leaving the world we made, reclaiming heaven's love for everyone as Christ. The circle shining within our mind and calling all to its heart. Love and joy and peace we are. told a child all of us one in Christ. Leave no one desolate and separate outside. Come to the circle, it's holy ground. Blessed by the purpose we share. Minds that would come awake, leaving the world we made, and reclaiming heaven's love for everyone as Christ. Come to the circle, teach peace with me.
That's it. So if you want to find that in YouTube, just type in Come to the Circle, Resta Burnham, and that's how you'll find it. And in fact, I think that's how I found it. I was looking for Resta songs. I wanted to see if there were any Resta songs on YouTube. And so I was searching for songs by Resta Burnham, and I came across this one, and I thought, wow. You know? Yeah, Come to the Circle, Resta Burnham, B-U-R-N-H-A-M. I think I typed it up above. B-U-R-N-H-A-M. So Burnham. Yeah, Burnham. Yeah. All right, so why don't we go ahead and get started on NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 8, which is on page 296. But we do have a lovely family here, and I think that song is a wonderful symbol of our family, right? Come to the circle. All right, here we go. Have I ever thought of asking Laurent to be our guest teacher? I think I did ask him last time I talked to him, and he was about to leave the country, and I don't remember how long ago that was. So it was kind of like, you know, yeah, maybe later. He was going somewhere. So maybe when I get back from India, I need to do that again. Because I did. I did ask him, and it just wasn't a good timing. And then time moved on. So when I get back, how's that sound? We'll ask him again. NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 8, page 296. When you do not seem to know how to become an empty shell, it is because you are focusing on your head, or better said, your thinking mind. Your thinking mind will not teach you how not to think. Your thinking mind is interested in its own survival. So it will take the time you give it to think some more. Now that's, to me, it's a funny little paragraph, but it's a very true paragraph, even though I see humor in it. It's a very true paragraph. And at some level, we all know this, although some of us have a greater challenge with it than others. But we can't think our way out of this. We can't think our way out of this. We can't think, how do I let go of anger? Letting go of anger is about letting go of thinking. You know, we can't think, how can I get rid of this guilt? How can I, you know, we can't talk ourselves out of guilt. In fact, I have a friend who has OCD. And, you know, I don't know a lot about OCD. Maybe some of you guys do. I think maybe this, what I'm about to say, is very typical of at least some types of OCD. You know, there are different types. But I think this is typical. You know, I don't think it's unusual to her. So what happens is, you know, she will begin to feel guilty. But then the OCD, what the OCD does is it makes her think that if she thinks hard enough, if she can really look at this with her thinking mind, think about this long enough, if she can just keep thinking about it, that she can think her way out of the guilt. But then what it does is it actually thinks her way deeper into it. And as a result, she suffers a lot. But that OCD that she has, I have noticed, is just an exaggeration of what we all have. It's just an exaggeration of what we all have. We think we can think our way out of this. And thinking isn't going to get us out of this. Thinking just takes us deeper into it. And that's what this paragraph is saying, that what we really need to learn is not to think. And that's what, as you guys know, that's what rest, accept, and trust is all about. We learn to rest the mind. Resting the mind is resting away from thinking. And it seems to take effort, and again, it takes effort because we're so addicted to thinking. And then what we do is we come into spirituality, you know, and we bring our addiction with us. Instead of really listening to what spirituality is about, we bring our addiction with us. And so, you know, we start saying, oh, you know, I feel so guilty. You know, I need to think somehow. I need to think. How can I think my way to the true self? How can I think my way into the real world? What avenue of thinking will get me there? And what this is saying is no avenue of thinking will get you there. Thinking is the mechanism that was created to make experience. And experience is that which hides truth. So when we're using thinking to try and think our way to truth or think our way out of illusion, we're using the mechanism that we made to create illusion. We're trying to use the illusion creator to get out of illusion. Can you see how that will never work? So, let me just read the paragraph again. When you do not seem to know how to become an empty shell, and this happens. Let me just stop right there. This happens. You know, at some point it won't happen anymore, but it does happen until it doesn't happen anymore. You know, like let's say I am experiencing some kind of anxiousness. I'm anxious about something. And, of course, I'm on a spiritual path. I'm a spiritual student. And I'm experiencing a lot of anxiousness. And I think, you know, I don't remember this. I've heard this rest, accept, and trust teaching once or twice. I remember Gina said something, but I can't remember what it is. You know, I can't remember how to get rid of, which is actually the wrong attitude anyway, but I'm just going to demonstrate. I can't remember how to get rid of this anxiety. You know, I have to get rid of this anxiety. What can I do to get rid of this anxiety? You know, maybe it's hard for me to even remember what it was like, actually, because now I automatically want to go to rest. See, this is how natural it becomes. I automatically want to go to rest now. I can't remember the thinking that I used to do, but I know I used to do it. I know rest wasn't natural for me in the beginning. I can't remember the thinking. I used to, you know, spend hours thinking about how can I get rid of this anxiety. Now I can't even pretend to do that because I don't remember. I know now that, you know, if anxiety comes, rest, right? Let go. But I didn't at first. And so this is really addressing me back when I was there, where I would try and think my way out of anxiety. And it's saying when you don't know how to become an empty shell, you can't think your way into being an empty shell, which is what I used to try to do. You can't think about this long enough and hard enough that you become empty, because the thinking is filling the shell, right? When you do not seem to know how to become an empty shell, which would have been my experience, I don't know how to get rid of this guilt, I don't know how to get rid of this fear, right? When you do not seem to know how to become an empty shell, it is because you are focusing on your head, or better said, your thinking mind. Your thinking mind will not teach you how not to think. Your thinking mind is interested in its own survival. So it will take the time you give it to think some more. It's just never going to work, which is why I think it's a funny paragraph. All right, so let's go on to the next paragraph. When you notice your mind is full and you want to become an empty shell, you must refocus your mind from your head to your heart. Your heart will teach your mind the way of release because your heart is love. Now, again, you know, when you're reading a book, you have to have words. But it's really interesting looking at the words that are chosen in this little paragraph that I just read. First of all, we have the thinking mind that was in the previous paragraph, the thinking mind. The thinking mind is not going to teach us how to not think, right? Because the thinking mind is interested in thinking because that's its survival. That's its identity. I am thinking, right? But in the second paragraph, we have something called a mind that is not the thinking mind. It says, when you notice your mind is full, and that part could be the thinking mind, but continue to listen. When you notice your mind is full and you want to become as an empty shell, you must refocus your mind from your head to your heart. That doesn't mean refocus your thinking. In this part of the sentence, the word mind means attention. Refocus your attention from your mind to your heart. Drop to the heart. Drop into your sincerity. Drop into your willingness to be healed. When you notice your mind is full and you want to become as an empty shell, you must refocus your mind from your head to your heart. Your heart will teach your mind the way of release. Your heart will teach you how to redirect your attention. Your heart will teach, because you can't get rid of your attention, or another word we might use for that is awareness. You can't get rid of that because basically that's what you are. It'd be a little bit like, you know, a body trying to get rid of skin, bones, blood, muscles. You know, you can't because that's what the body is. You can't get rid of attention. You can't get rid of awareness. But what you can do is you can learn from the heart. How to redirect attention so that it's not lost in thinking. And it's very difficult to put words on this. I mean, any words that I would use that I would talk about redirecting your attention, you're going to have heard before. And if you don't have the feel of it yourself yet, you're still not going to understand because you haven't experienced it yet. And if you go to your mind and start thinking about what I'm saying and try and get your mind to explain to you what I'm saying, well, that's what the first paragraph said wasn't going to work. So the first thing we need to learn here, if we're caught in not quite getting this yet, right? The first thing we need to learn is how to drop from the head to the heart. And I suppose how to drop from the head to the heart is going to vary with different people. But one common way of dropping from the head to the heart is prayer. I think I mentioned last night in the Gentle Healing Group that when I sat down to do these mind-searching exercises on the days that were assigned a mind-searching exercise, I start the mind-searching exercise with a prayer. Right? Something like, please let me see whatever is here that I need to see that would be helpful as I do this exercise. I don't want to hide anything from myself. I'm not asking the thinking to think about it. You could say I'm asking the mystery. The word that's being used here is heart, but the truth is, I don't think that we really know what the heck we're asking when we ask. We're asking the universe, we're asking God, we're asking Jesus, we're asking the heart. These are all symbols we put on it. But we're not asking our thinking. Whatever that is that we're asking, that's what's being represented here by the heart. Please let me see whatever I need to see as I do this exercise. I am sincerely interested in healing the mind. I don't want to hide anything from myself. And then as I do the exercise, things begin to show up. I begin to see little thoughts that I hadn't really noticed before, that I've been thinking. What made that happen? The heart, the mystery, the desire, grace, I mean, you know, those are all just words. But whatever it is, it wasn't thinking. Some people, I guess, prayer doesn't work. So another thing that I've heard that people do is they start just by watching their breath. For some people, they just watch their breath. And something in that, and this never works for me. Watching the breath never works for me. Prayer works much better. But for some people, just watching the breath, just in the process of being still and watching the breath, they kind of drop down from the head to the heart. For some people, listening to music. Listening to inspirational music. For some people, picking up an inspirational book and reading a little and contemplating what they're reading will help to drop them. But if we want to find the answers that are going to lead to our truth, the answers that are pointing us in that direction, we have to find this other intelligence. By other intelligence, I mean not the thinking. And in fact, the thinking is not really intelligence. We think it is, but it's not. So really what we're looking for is the only genuine intelligence. Sometimes people find this genuine intelligence or wisdom, as Kathy has typed in the room, by being willing to forget about something. So, you know, let's say I'm all confused, like one of the questions that people have in their mind, I call it the should I stay or should I go confusion. You know, should I stay with this partner? You know, is this helping me heal or am I just staying stuck? Should I go? Should I stay with this job? Is this helping me heal or am I just being stuck and, you know, should I go? The should I stay, should I go confusion. Everybody seems to get it at some point. And again, what keeps us in the confusion is going to the thinking. But sometimes people are so attached in situations like that, they find difficulty, you know, saying a prayer or doing anything else to drop into the heart and get clarity. And again, that's just because of their attachments. So sometimes what works is forget about it. I'm going to forget about it. And when you forget about it, you have to be willing to not make any change until you know. So I'm just going to forget about it. You know, I'm going to forget about whether I should stay or whether I should go. I'm going to quit thinking about should I stay or should I go. I'm just going to be present in this moment and see what happens. And believe it or not, when you forget about it, you know, I forget about it. I'm just going to stay, just be in the moment. You get out of the thinking. And when you get out of the thinking, something occurs that causes you to realize your answer. You know, it could be a song title. Somebody could say something, you know, it could just be the realization comes. You could just feel it in your gut. Oh my God, I have to go. You know, I can feel it. It's intuitive this time. I have to go, you know, but the forgetting about it got out of the head, you know, so sometimes you just have to be willing to forget about something. The thinking is not going to find the answer for you. So again, this paragraph says, when you notice your mind is full and you want to become an empty shell, you must refocus your mind, which means refocus your attention from your head to your heart. Your heart will teach your mind the way of release because your heart is love. Your heart, being of love, knows one purpose, and that is love. Your head, being of thinking, knows many purposes, because that is thinking. Let go of the confusion of the head and focus yourself on the purpose of the heart. Focusing on one purpose leads you clearly in one direction. But focusing on many purposes does not lead you at all. If you pay any reasonable attention to your head when there's some kind of confusion happening, like let's use the should I stay or should I go idea. Because again, every one of us seems to experience that at some point in our life. So I'm in a should I stay or should I go situation. I'm confused. I don't know. You know, has anybody ever told you to sit down and write down the list of pros and cons? Have you ever ended up with a list of pros? You know, if I go, here's the good thing about leaving. If I go, here's the bad things about leaving. If I stay, here's the good things about staying. If I leave, here's the bad things about leaving. Have you noticed that the pro and con columns can be equal? So now you just have a list of, you know, crap. That doesn't tell you anything. It's not like there's two in the pro column and 10 in the con column and you know what to do, right? They're equal or they're close enough to equal that, okay, now you've got all your crap on paper, but you still don't know what to do. Right? That didn't help, you know? And that's the mind. If you were to look at that stuff that you wrote down, you would find that the mind didn't have one purpose. For instance, let's pretend like I'm in a romantic relationship that, you know, has kind of gone sour, in my opinion, right? Do I stay or do I go? Well, you know, one of the pros of staying, which also is a con of going, it could be, you know, he makes pretty good money. You know, I'm financially secure in this relationship, and if I leave this relationship, I might not be financially secure. You know, another thing could be maybe, you know, I've always wanted to travel. I love to travel, and he hates to travel. We don't even go to the movies. We stay locked up in the house all the time. I feel like I'm suffocating. So one of the pros of leaving is that, you know, I'll be free, and, you know, maybe I can begin to travel and experience some more life, you know. That's a pro of leaving. So let's see, what other reasons could there be? What other things could be on my list? Well, maybe the way we raise our children is different. You know, he's kind of a fundamentalist Catholic, and he's trying to raise them with that thought process, and I'm not. You know, I'm, you know, into this true spirituality stuff. I'd really like to be teaching them something different. So a pro of leaving is, you know, I can raise my kids more the way I want because he'll be less involved in it. It won't be polluted by his thought processes. But then again, you know, I can be a little decisive. And, you know, sometimes I like just being able to go to him and just have him, you know, I lay it out and he kind of tells me what to do. And actually sometimes I like that because I feel relieved. You know, I'm a little relieved when he just takes the decision away from me and I don't have to think about it with my boggled mind some more. And I'll stop there. But if you look at these four things, that was four different purposes. That's what the thinking mind does. One purpose was financial security. Another purpose was living life the way I want to live life. Another purpose was raising my kids the way I want to raise kids. Another purpose was being free of the responsibility of having to make my own decisions. See, that's what this is saying. The mind has multiple purposes, and that's why it leads to confusion. The mind is not marching in just one direction. If it was, it would be fine, but it's not. It's marching in multiple directions all at once. And if you look at it, you can see it. And that's where confusion comes from. But the heart is marching in one direction. And NTI would word that as know thyself. Awakening, truth, realization. And so the heart looks at everything in one way. And therefore the heart is very clear on the direction it needs to go. So again, this paragraph says, your heart, being of love, knows one purpose, and that is love. Right? Love here being synonymous with your true self, with reality, with awakening. Your heart, being of love, knows one purpose, and that is love. Your head, being of thinking, knows many purposes, because that is thinking. Let go of the confusion of the head and focus yourself on the purpose of the heart. Focusing on one purpose leads you clearly in one direction, but focusing on many purposes does not lead you at all. Your mind is willing for distractions because your mind is split. This is why you must focus your mind on the heart and the leadership that is found there. When your mind is focused on the head, it revels in its own distractions, and it spins within the joy of its own pain. When your mind is focused on the heart, it recalls its true joy. And in the willingness given through this memory, it lets go of the distractions of the head. So again, the distractions of the head could be things like financial security, living life my way, raising my children my way, being free of the burden of decision making, you know, for some people. I actually always liked making my own decisions. But, you know, whatever the individual priorities are for that personality, you know, for some it might be not having to go anywhere, being able to stay in the house, right? Whatever. What this is saying is all of those things are distractions, because none of those things are realizing truth. They are all the continuation of experience with the value of reality. Right, when you're worried about financial security, for example, let's just pick one that, again, probably most of us have experienced in some way or another. Even very rich people can be concerned about the stock market and things like that, right? So most of us have experienced the financial security concern in one way or another. It's something we have in common in today's world. So let's look at just that one purpose of the mind. When you are thinking about financial security, when that's really what's in your mind in the present moment, for whatever reason, and you're thinking about financial security, are you in that moment distracted from the purpose of truth? I think the answer is yes. If you really look at it, when you're all caught up thinking about financial security, you are distracted from the purpose of truth. And if you have children and you have a partner and you and your partner have different ideas about how to raise the children, and you're all caught up thinking about how can you get your partner to see this your way, and, you know, thinking about what can you do to raise your children in the way that you think is important, you're distracted from truth. And if you have a partner who doesn't like to travel, really just stays home and watches TV all the time, and you want to see the world and go to concerts and go to plays and experience things, and it's just not working, and you're thinking about that, how frustrated you are in this relationship, you're distracted from truth. You see, every one of the purposes of the mind has something in common. They have a common denominator. They look like, at the surface, many different purposes, right? I have the purpose of financial security, the purpose of living my life my way, the, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, if you look a little deeper, they have a common denominator. It's distraction from truth. It's delusion. It's taking experience too seriously. It's giving experience the value of reality. That's their purpose. So you could say, you know, although it looks like the heart has one purpose, know thyself, and it looks like the mind has multiple purposes, in reality, there's only two possible purposes. It's just the mind is disguising its purposes in a clever way. But the heart has the purpose of know thyself. And the mind has the purpose of hell no, don't know thyself. Hell no. Anything but that. And so that's why it says in this paragraph that there's a joy in the spinning of the mind, the pain of the spinning of the mind. The joy is the attraction to the ego. The joy is the attachment to seeing myself as an individual, separate person. Even if it's full of suffering, at least I get to be me. But what this paragraph also says is that joy is nothing compared to your true joy. And anyone who spends any time, you know, if you spend time in the morning in contemplation, meditation, you know, you've probably at least started, if not gotten very deeply into that joy of knowing yourself. There's something so total about that joy. I mean, I don't know what words to put on it. It's so total that if you take the time to taste the joy of knowing yourself, you know that the joy of being a person is flat by comparison. It doesn't have the fullness of the joy of knowing the self. Which again is another reason to spend, you know, a minimum of an hour each morning in meditation and contemplation, because it's in that time that you set aside that you start to taste the joy of truth. And only by tasting the joy of truth and then contrasting it with the joy of me, false self, can you see which one is really fulfilling and which one is flat. I mean, it may have its laughter in it and it may have its fun in it, but it's not as full. Yeah, choice A or choice B. So your mind is willing for distractions because your mind is split. This is why you focus your mind. This is why you must focus your mind on the heart and the leadership that is found there. Again, take that time for meditation, contemplation, right? This is why you must focus your mind on the heart and the leadership that is found there. When your mind is focused on the head, it revels in its own distractions and it spins within the joy of its own pain. When your mind is focused on the heart, it recalls its true joy. And in the willingness given through this memory, it lets go of the distractions of the head. So getting a taste of yourself helps you to let go of the false self. One way that A Course in Miracles words this is it says that the Holy Spirit teaches through contrast. Right? So contrast, you know, during the day when you're caught up in the world, taking it too seriously, with that quiet time in the morning when you're going deep into the heart in meditation and contemplation. Contrast them, look at them, compare them. This is the one type of comparison that's actually helpful. You know, you'll often hear spiritual teachers say, don't compare. You know, they're talking about like, you know, comparing me to you know, me, the false me, to you, which one of us is better. You know, that comparing never wins. But comparing the experience of the false self to the experience of the true self, you're going to find a winner. And it's going to help motivate you to release your attachment to the false self and go deeper and deeper into the experience of the true self. Your mind is willing for distractions because your mind is split. This is why you must focus your mind on the heart and the leadership that is found there. When your mind is focused on the head, it revels in its own distractions and it spins within the joy of its own pain. When your mind is focused on the heart, it recalls its true joy. And in the willingness given through this memory, it lets go of this distraction of the head. In this way, the heart leads you to become an empty shell. In this way, you surrender the experience you do not want and you welcome the one that you do. So if we don't take time each day for contemplation, meditation, you know, I'll just call it that special time with God that's set aside where, you know, we're not doing anything else. You know, one of the things I've been talking about in the gentle healing group is I've been asking people not to multitask. Because if you're multitasking, think about it. If you're multitasking, if you're listening to an audio and typing up a letter, an email at the same time, you're not dropping from the head to the heart. You're just not. You're staying right up there in the thinking. And maybe you're hearing some of what's being said and think, oh, that's pretty cool, and you're writing it down. You are not dropping in and tasting. You can only drop in and taste when you give your undivided attention to God, which could be an audio, which could be a reading, right, that's pointing in that direction. But it must, there is no exception to this. It must be undivided attention. Because if it's not undivided attention, you're still listening to the thinking. And you're not getting a taste. And it's the tasting of the self, the knowing the fullness of it, the realizing how satisfying this is, that guides you to want more and more of that, and therefore you release the faults more and more, right? It's kind of like being taught through warm fuzzies. Do you guys remember? I mean, I was a trainer, you know, so I don't know if all people learn this when they're going through life, but, you know, certainly I went through a learning where I learned that adults, because I was an adult trainer, but I'm sure it's true with kids too, that adults learn much better through warm fuzzies than through cold pricklies. So like if you watch me as your teacher, now that I am your teacher, I wasn't before January 10th, but I stepped into that role then. So if you watch me as your teacher, what you will notice is I will tell you when you're doing things, you know, right, moving in the right direction. Like, oh, I'm so happy to hear you guys are asking within, asking inner wisdom. You know, oh, I'm so happy to hear that you guys are taking teacher's class. Right? I tell you when you're doing something, you know, right, if you'll pardon the language, moving in the right direction. But you don't hear me jumping on you and telling you when you did something wrong. Right? That's what happens when we take this undivided attention time and we go in and we taste the self as we get the warm fuzzy. And adults learn better from warm fuzzies. When we go in and we feel how good that feels, we want more of that, and we move more in that direction. And again, we don't like the cold pricklies. And guess what the mind gives us all the time? It's the cold pricklies, right? Isn't it the mind that tells you that you're not as good as other people? Isn't it the mind that says, hey, you're not doing your practice enough? Isn't it the mind that is pointing out everything you're doing wrong? We don't like that. So when we experience the love of the heart and we contrast it with the judgment of the mind, we're not stupid. We know what we want. But you have to take the time to taste it. You have to really taste it. And you can only taste it with your undivided attention. Otherwise, the mind will make sure you don't get a taste because it knows. It knows that if you taste the self enough, you will leave the mind behind, the thinking mind. And I'm going to have to leave you all with that because my time is up. Oh, by the way, I won't be back for a few weeks. I will send Cheryl some audios to play in this time frame. I will be back, let's see, March 1, right here. March 1, you'll have me live for the Guiding Light. All right, bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Regina. That was really, just lovely. I love listening to you. You know, such clarity. You're such a clear teacher. And you're very honest, and that's what I love about you. All right, well, you have safe travels, my dear. All right, upcoming next.